Hi, Rocketeers. I'm Karen Tongson, filling in for Guy Branum, who, like a good bear, is on his winter hiatus. Welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, Captain Ragnarok.
Reporting to duty.
Sis. Have you been doing? I know you're not that far away from the fires, but making it through the kind of apocalyptic
air. I'm not
the
one to be worried about. Thank God we're safe. I feel terrible for every single person who had to endure that. I donated some toiletries. I went to CVS and, you know, I said that to somebody. They're like, you donated some toiletries? And I was like, not used
people
toiletries.
Need it.
Yeah, people need everything.
Yeah, I bought, no. They were thinking I donated some of my toiletries.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, just like your half-used shampoo.
Yeah, I was like, no, I'm not a complete monster. I went and got to CVS and just cleared out like the wet nap section and some the travel area and just put it all in the truck because I just and gave them some candy too because I know they probably want some candy.
I sent some pet supplies to the West Valley Society who are overrun. Anyway, you heard another voice in the room, and that other voice belongs to none other than journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hey there, Karen.
Hey
there, Winter.
Hey.
Hey there, everyone.
Hi, Wappler.
The sorority is in the house tonight.
Yeah, I know, right? This is going to go into slumber party territory.
Coven.
Yeah.
The coven.
We're a coven slash
Pop Rocket colon coven.
Yeah. Colon edition. Coven edition.
Let's soft shoe away from the colon that was a punctuation that I was trying to add but became something weirder and tell you that what we're here to do tonight, my friends, dear Rocketeers, is to give you our 200th episode.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Pop Rocket, do you believe it? It's 200 episodes. It's like... That's like 4 years, almost 4 years worth of episodes for folks.
Yeah.
Because it's like 52 weeks a year.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Oh,
right?
My God.
Insane.
Isn't that insane? So what we're going to do is, you know.
I've never committed to anything this long.
We're reflecting back on the arc of Pop Rocket, which launched all the way back in January 2015. And to mark this auspicious occasion, what we're going to do actually is to take stock of our 2015 selves and who we are today. I know that at other times we've reflected on, at different anniversaries of Pop Rocket, we've looked back, you know, decades ago. Mm. But it's going to be interesting to look at this little short snippet of time. Anyway, we're very excited about that. We've had several transformative life events happen within the Pop Rocket family.
Yeah.
Margaret, do you have the tally?
I do. Let me just tally up the numbers real quick, crunch them up. We've had two marriages, Karen and Sarah, Winter and Alan. We've had one birth of Mr. Silas Edwin Earle. We've had two book publications, My Neon Green and Guy's My Life as a Goddess. And Karen is soon forthcoming. It's been incredible when you just look at it that way, just in terms of the personal milestones that each of us have checked off.
Yeah, it has been. It has been a really kind of amazing stretch of time, and it's been lovely spending it all with you. And plus, we couldn't do a 200th episode without the presence of Guy Branum in some way. And if you ever wondered what it would be like to take a vacation with Guy, his oft-discussed mother, and his niece Olivia, stay tuned because we're going to join the Branhams on a recent weekend excursion to Seaside, California. And of course, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Magwops, you seem to have a book in your lap.
I do, because
I'm... And I'm wondering if that's your all about or if you're just that tired of us after 200
right,
episodes.
Right, that I'm just going to start reading.
Not even mad at it. Yeah. Not even mad at it.
I am carrying this around as a prop and as a reinforcement and as just a general joy maker. I'm finally reading a novel again. It's been a long time because, you know, the stars have not always aligned for such delicious reading, you know, the kind of thing that you can do. I like to do in like a 5-hour spate. I always like to read books in like 2 or 3 5-hour sittings because it just works better for me to like digest it that way and talk about it that way. And so a couple of weeks ago, on some kind of random Saturday, I got a chance to dive into There, There by Tommy Orange. And this book has been getting a lot of attention. I'm not going to be the first or the last person that you've heard talk about it. It is written by Tommy, who is part of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes in Oklahoma. And he was also born and raised in Oakland. And this novel is just a real juggernaut, just a real powerhouse of Native American thought. He basically focuses on 12 different characters who are all going to the big Oakland powwow for different reasons. The novel starts with an essay that deals with the treatment of Native Americans by this country, and that floored me. It's just such a stark reminder of the mistreatment and the genocidal history in this country in terms of Native Americans. And as Thanksgiving is approaching, I'm really thinking about it differently, partially because of Tommy Orange. I mean, he writes about Thanksgiving in particular and just, you know, the idea of what a successful massacre was and how that was linked with the idea of Thanksgiving for a very long time. And I'm not saying that we all have to banish our celebrations of Thanksgiving because it's evolved and become different things, I think. But at the same time, I think it's worth remembering what that history was.
It's really exciting that there is this a piece of Native American fiction like this that's out and about in the world right now, because it's been, I think, a little while since we've had that in the mainstream. I'm thinking, you know, the years that Sherman Alexie and people like Louise Erdrich and you know, Leslie Marmon Silko, like in the 90s, there was a real awareness of Native American fiction and writing and poetry, and it seemed to become a part of the mainstream, like, fiction fabric, but it seems to have fallen away over a period of time, and it's like at this particular moment, especially as we were just talking about, like, on the last episode, where Native American women in particular winning representation in seats in the U.S. government.
Yes.
I do feel like, you know, it's been a long time coming, and I hope that it's part of our reckoning with this legacy, especially now around this period of Thanksgiving and self-reflexivity that we have coming soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Louise Erdrich gave a real banging quote to this book. Mm-hmm. You know, she talks about he's a new writer with an old heart and a brilliant and generous artist. And Sherman Alexie, it's interesting because the last couple of years have been particularly rough for his reputation. I mean, he's been caught up
The Me Too stuff.
And the Me Too stuff, exactly, where, you know, he's been accused of using his power as a successful writer to manipulate young women and that kind of thing. And so it's been sad to see that come his way, because I've always admired him a lot as a writer. And, you know, it's now a lot more complicated for me to, like, pick up his work.
Yeah, it's true.
But it's nice to pick up somebody like Tommy Orange and just see this
new
real
voices.
Yeah, new voices, this real vitality. And I'm so glad that it's getting all of this attention.
That's wonderful. And Winter, I know that you're feeling a little bookish this week as well, aren't you?
I started listening. No, here's the thing, is like, I'm actually a reader and I don't think that audiobooks make sense. That's just my reasoning. But I wanted to get the audiobook version of Becoming by Michelle Obama because I wanted to hear her voice.
Yeah, that's a great reason. And I honestly feel like any which way you can get it down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Any which way you can hear it, listen to it, read it, absorb it, whatever.
No, of course. Like, I feel like I learn more when I can see the words and take the words in and sort of parse sentences and whatnot. But I think that hearing her voice was it was very comforting. And as soon as it started, audiobooks are tedious. As soon as it started and she started, I didn't know if she was like telling a story or if she was like directing someone around the corner, but she started talking about, she really spends, I've only gotten through four chapters so far, but she spends a great deal talking about her childhood and living in the house that she lived in. And I would have to say within like the first three pages, I was crying because she talked very, you know, she's cool. You know what I mean? Like, she's just cool. And without that sort of having to be the first lady of it all.
It's, like, stripping away at that, that persona.
She's a lot more accessible. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was ever inaccessible. I think that she was being the first lady, which I respect and admire her for. But even stripping away that part of it, it felt good to be in the comfort of just hearing her and understanding. And she spends a lot of the beginning of the book talking about what it feels like to go from something where people are always around you and constantly monitoring you and being in your face to, she talks about, like, it changes when you go back into your own home. And while there's still people monitoring them, they have some, they obviously have less security detail now as private citizens than they did as you know, president and first lady and being the first family. But just sort of like she was indulging in a snack and making a sandwich for herself and knowing that she made it and it was going to be great and she was going to enjoy it and no one was going to really interrupt her or bother her. And I felt happy for her to have that. And she talked about growing up in Southside Chicago. And there's just so many stories already in the first four or five chapters where it's just like she really, whoever helped her write this book and put this book together did a really good job, because I thought I knew a lot about her just based on what we'd learned about her throughout those beautiful 8 years before this shitstorm started. Mm-hmm. But I'm learning more about her as a woman, as a mother, as a wife. I love the way she kind of deals with her relationship with Barack. I can totally relate to that she's in control. She has to, like, get him to, you know, he has wild flights of whimsy and she's very much like indulges what she thinks makes sense and doesn't entertain and is very honest and open about what doesn't, you know, get her excited. And I just, a smart lady, really, 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 really just understanding and, like, clear about her intentionality on everything. And I just inspired already from just, she inspired me so much. I just listened to that book for like an hour and a half and I was like, this woman is just everything.
Yeah, I've been reading, I haven't read the book, but I have been reading about how she talks about IVF in the book, and particularly says that both daughters are from IVF. And I really appreciated that admission from her as a person who also used IVF to have a baby, because I think it shines a light on a process that a lot of Americans and people around the world obviously are engaging in and sometimes feel like they have to, like, keep it in the shadows. I think the fact that she's owned up to, like, them having major marital problems at times, like that they've gone to counseling, that they've really, really had to work on it. And I think that's also doing people a real world of good, because everyone idealizes their relationship to a point that was almost like a little much, you know, like assuming they just never had a single battle and that they just, like, glided through dance floors holding hands at all times.
100%. I'm learning every day that that's not how it works, but I seriously felt like maybe they didn't have problems because they worked through their problems. And the fact of the matter is I'm glad I didn't learn about any of that stuff until now.
Until
it's
after
true.
The fact.
It's like it would have been kind of confusing and distracting while they were in office.
Obviously. Yeah.
Like, we know too much about, like, Trump's horrible marriage and everything else, and that's obviously distracting along with everything
else
he's doing.
And I think that one of the things, too, that impacted, you know, whatever the legacy of the Clintons and certainly adversely affected Hillary Clinton's campaigns for the presidency is precisely this kind of veneer of, like, not discussing or not dealing with the, like, herd of elephants in the room around the issues with their marriage and the issues around, like, infidelity and just trying to, like, be stoic about it and never admit to, like, I mean, I think that there have been admissions. It's just like, of course, we had a difficult time, blah, blah, blah. But I think that there's something about, like, again, the kind of details that both of you are referring to in Michelle Obama's book that are incredibly human and that kind of confess to the things that many of us have to do that we sometimes feel shame about, but that, you know, but, like, having that be part of an open conversation.
But talk about it in a healthy way.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the fact that it's practically, and this is taking nothing away from Monica Lewinsky, but she has to practically harangue President Clinton, Bill Clinton, to apologize for stuff, like, 20 years later, It's too many years later that we're still talking about this, that we're still having to deal with
this. There
are
whole college classes that have graduated.
There are babies born graduated from high school. Yeah. Like, it's just, I don't know. Anyway, you should 100% pick up this book. This woman is like the embodiment of female empowerment. And just the fact that she says something like, I was made fun of my race. I was called an angry black woman. They made fun of my butt. And these people wanted a photo and to take home on their mantle every time. I was like, exactly.
Yeah.
And I just really, everything about what she was saying, it just hit home.
There you go. Audiobook, you know, while you're on your Thanksgiving road trips or like, you know, holiday reading because for some inspiration. So this week, taking very seriously filling in for Guy Branum as the host of our 200th episode and bringing in a topic that has been brought into Pop Rocket at least a dozen times by Guy Branum, my all about is Survivor. And it happens to be the newest season of Survivor, season 37, and the theme for this season...
Okay, let's just take a moment to just season 37.
Right?
It doesn't make sense how they do that.
Right? Isn't
that
insane?
They need to just start using Roman numerals at this point.
It's true. I think that they should just like kind of... I think that, yeah, like the Super... Like so that everyone's confused, like at the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
They're using Roman numerals. But in any case, this season's theme is David versus Goliath. Now, we've seen these kind of schlocky themes before on Survivor, beauty versus brawn, you know, and whatnot. And of course, the infamous 2006 season with the kind of war between races, right? Like, you know, with the Latinos, the blacks, the white, you know, folks. But this season, I think this is probably the first season since that 2006 season where it really touches upon the zeitgeist of all this stuff swirling around in contemporary popular culture right now, because the Davids versus Goliaths isn't just, you know, like the strong people versus the weak people or like the puny people, you know. It's people who, the Goliaths are people who've achieved and experienced success, often had a leg up in life in some way, coming from an affluent background or, you know, having brawn in a way that's led to their success. As Jeff Probst said, it's not that you didn't work hard to get to where you are, but still you had these different circumstances that enabled that. Whereas the Davids are people from many different walks of life. There's one person who is now like a robotics expert, but who's like extremely nerdy and frail. Somebody who's a lawyer from Kentucky, who's a public defender, but who came from a very poor family who had an opioid addicted mother and that kind of thing. So in this, you know, kind of post-Trumpian world, the story about underdogs and winners or losers versus winners cuts across a real range of demographics in this showdown between these two tribes in the beginning. Anyway, I think it's super fascinating, and like there are some surprising results that come up in the first episode alone, including some major drama after the first, it's not even a tribal council. It's before the tribal council, the challenge, the reward / immunity challenge. And I think that this is going to have as great an impact as that 2006, racial segregation season of Survivor. Well, on these very 2015 notes, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back to do more 200th episode brouhaha right after this.
Since the dawn of time, screenwriters have taken months to craft their stories. But now, three Hollywood professionals shall attempt the impossible. Break a story in 1 hour.
That's right. Here on Storybreak, I, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
the creators behind award-winning shows like Video Game High School,
have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Now, an awesome movie starts with an awesome title.
I chose The Billionaire's Marriage Valley.
Mine was Christmas Pregnant Paradise.
Okay, next we need a protagonist.
So I've heard Wario best described as Libertarian Mario.
And of course, every great movie needs a stellar pitch.
In order to get to heaven, sometimes you gotta raise a little hell.
That's the tagline!
Check out Storybreak every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio,
Winter Mitchell-Roba.
Margaret Wappler.
So for our 200th episode, we're looking back at the year we started, 2015, and asking ourselves how much we've changed as podcasters and pop culture omnivores. So to start things off tonight, one of the things I want to do, because we just came from this midterm election season where there was this meme going around, me voting in 2016 versus me voting in 2018. And there were some real great ones there. There's a really good thread on the Pop Rocket Facebook group with some of those memes. But I want to put it to the panelists. If you were to do a me doing Pop Rocket in 2015 versus me doing Pop Rocket in 2018, what would that look like? Give us your visuals.
It can't get any better than this, considering January 2015. The me in 2015 is Sarah Connor with the red dot in her head in Terminator 1 in the disco versus 2018, which is Sarah Connor out in that random base loading up her gun with her guns out.
Hell yes.
Ready to crush everybody after getting busted out of jail by her son and T2. Yeah, that is 100% me.
Yeah, I mean, it's let's go through all the memes and we'll find out, you know, what goes behind some of these, our reasoning is behind these transformations.
Yeah, I have to give full credit to my friend Whitney Freelander for doing this first, and it went around viral on Twitter. But the first image on the 2015 side would be Elizabeth Moss as Peggy Olson from Mad Men leaving her office with, you know, the cig hanging out of her mouth and
perfect.
The box of supplies in her arms and the sunglasses and just ready to stop taking shit from the patriarchy. Fast forward to 2018, where it's Elizabeth Moss again, but this time as Offred from The Handmaid's Tale, just trying to survive as, you know, an enslaved baby machine for right-wing Christian fundamentalists.
That is very, very, very dark. But thank you, Elizabeth Moss, for all that.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny because my meme is also Mad Men related, and it's John Hamm in the season finale of the series finale episode in his yoga pose at Esalen in the crisp white shirt with that little smirk on his face.
Yes.
And then me in 2018 is John Hamm looking raggedy as fuck in like a busted boozing buddy in Baby Driver.
Yeah,
you know. And just kind of looking a little bit like way more middle-aged and clothes that are too young for him.
Yeah.
Bedraggled as fuck. And I think that, you know, it's striking that, you know, I think that we began with all of our memes had, I don't know about yours though, Winter, like had some level of optimism or at least kind of strength in the beginning or some ebullience in the beginning of that 2015 mode. And I think that 2015 really was the last time that, you know, where we had this sense of kind of, we thought we knew we were headed. We had a sense of like all of this kind of empowerment and momentum. And, you know, like Trump was floating around as this idea or this specter, but there was no, it was kind of a pre-lapsarian, pre-loss of innocence moment to a certain extent. And people were grooving on some very interesting things in that moment. Like, I know that that was the year of Taylor Swift, for example.
And yeah,
like,
so
look
crazy
at what's happened between Taylor Swift in 2015 to Taylor Swift in 2018.
Yeah, she was on like five or six different magazine covers, including Time, like she was some kind of politician or something.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we talked about Trump back in 2015, but it was just as a lark, right? It was like the ultimate cocktail question of like, what do you think of this Trump run? How ridiculous is that, right?
Yeah.
You know, it just never seemed like it was ever possibly real. And, you know, let's all be honest, it didn't really seem real until that gruesome hour on election night in 2016 when I was there with Karen Tongson, where the party just lost.
Before I joined
all
Pop Rocket for real.
Oh, really? Was
yeah,
that
it was
before?
I officially joined as a regular panelist in December of 2016. So I joined like December 21st. So it was
so you
right
joined
after.
In the dark days. We needed your reinforcement. Oliver was so, you know,
he was
just
like, I'm
crushed.
Out.
Yeah, that he was gone. Yeah, I mean, I just remember that 0 hour at your party where it just went from like, yes, 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 Hillary Clinton. I mean, like, okay, like she has some problems, but this is great. First yes. female president, yeah. blah, 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 blah. And then just
apocalypse from right. zero to apocalypse in no time. I mean, one of the striking things, too, is that, you know, I went back to the first episodes of Pop Rocket, you know, because I was the only one who wasn't here at the very beginning.
That's
and
right.
so, you know, I pay homage to all of you OGs here. but the one thing that struck me is in episode one, Kanye West yeah. was a topic of conversation. And then we just in episode 199 had a very different take on Kanye.
Yeah.
I mean, so like Winter, that's been one of your story arcs on Pop Rocket throughout these 200 episodes.
I mean, I guess the reason why I was Sarah Connor with a target on my head is because I was a deer in the headlights and didn't know it. And that's mm-hmm. usually what happens when you're a deer in a headlight. You just didn't know, see it coming. And 2015 was a year that I just did not see coming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the person I was then, I think I was a little bit more whatever is whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was definitely like, you know, just hanging by the edge of my seat on every single freaking day at every single freaking moment. And now it's just like the person I am now is so much more settled and also just really jaded. I didn't really think that would ever happen to me. I always thought that I'd have like some real just like I'd maintain that level of optimism or naivete that I possessed in 2015. I always thought that was part of my charm.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize now that it's just, you know, I'm glad the things that happened between 2015 and now pop culture and personally happened to me. But I'm realizing when it comes to Kanye, like it's literally was like a slow breakup. Mm-hmm. You just can't make excuses for someone you love anymore. You have to eventually be like calling time on all this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
If you told me in 2015 that I'd write a first person editorial in the Variety magazine in Variety.com about how much I dislike Kanye West, I'd been like, I would never, I would not, I would
certainly
so
not
different.
From episode one of Pop Rocket.
No, and I don't feel, and yeah. I've never looked back on that moment because it's how I feel.
Do you think that we had any more nuance in 2015 than we do in 2018, or was 2015 the start of the collapse of nuance to a certain extent in pop cultural worlds? I mean, you know, because we had a lot of kind of major events occur that year, you know, that kind of asked for people to reconsider things that they thought they knew, like Caitlyn Jenner, right?
Right.
Within the first couple of months of Pop Rocket, for example, there was an episode that was titled a Bruce Jenner episode after the interview with Diane Sawyer.
You're going back to the sex thing, and it's apples and oranges. There's two different things here. Sexuality is who you are personally attracted to, who you know, turns you on, male or female. But gender identity is how to do with who you are as a person and your soul and who you identify with inside.
And then a few weeks later, the Caitlyn Jenner episode,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's this sort of rapidity to which things changed and transformed. But also there was a lot of nuance that was expected of pop cultural audiences to be able to understand what was happening to someone who existed in a particular way in pop culture for decades and then was going through this transition and doing it in a very public manner. So, do you think that we were existing in the space of greater nuance or acceptance in that moment? And then as things ramped up with the kind of electoral process of 2016, did we just grow to abandon that because the rhetoric was so ramped up?
You know, I think back on the whole Bruce Caitlin thing, and I think that together everyone learned a lot through that public coming out.
But we didn't know she was a shitty person.
Well, I do vaguely remember in that early interview with Diane Sawyer, at the time he was still Bruce, was saying that he was conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very complicated, right? Like, how can you be coming out as this trans person, soon to emerge as Caitlyn Jenner, and embrace these politicians and policies that directly harm you and who you're trying to become? And I think, in some ways, though, I think because Caitlyn is a conservative, it has opened up a certain that is one example of a nuanced conversation that we're having around the fact that unexpected people can embrace policies that aren't good for them. I think it does shed some kind of light on like why certain people voted for Trump who really shouldn't have. I mean, nobody should have voted for Trump, but like certain people voted for Trump who are going to be directly and actively hurt by things he's doing as a president.
Mm-hmm. And she came very belatedly to that realization just recently.
Just recently. And, you know, of course, like the Twitter... So long after the fact. And, of course, Twitter like blew up with a lot of people being like, girl, I told you so. Yeah. Like, what is wrong with you? But I look back on Caitlyn coming out as I'm like nostalgic about it. I feel like people were still a bit more patient with like everyone learning certain terms about like cisgendered this or whatever. And I feel like now people can get very attack dog when somebody uses something incorrectly in that way.
Yeah, and I appreciate that.
And I feel like, I don't know, like, I mean, I understand where the anger can come from because it can feel like these missteps are slighting somebody's identity or invalidating their existence. But I do feel like, in general, being, like, patient and kind and you know, sort of all of us holding hands through these processes is, like, the best thing.
Well, in talking about that early episode of Pop Rocket and the name of that episode of Pop Rocket and Caitlyn's previous name, I think that one of the things that, you know, we're trying to do, obviously, is not, you know, dead name Caitlyn Jenner, but to try to frame the discussion as it has evolved historically in pop culture. And I think that's, you know, that's an important thing to bring to the fore because that's part of like how the conversation around trans in pop culture has evolved in that course of time. Let's jump ahead to something fairly recently, a year ago in November 2017, a clip of Danica Rome's victory speech after she won a seat and became the first openly transgendered person elected to the Virginia's legislature.
I want to make a point here that no matter what you look like, where you come from, how you worship, who you love, how you identify, and yeah, how you rock. That if you have good public policy ideas, if you're well qualified for office, bring those ideas to the table because this is your America too.
Yeah, it's also interesting to remember that she beat out a 13-term Republican who had authored a bill to restrict transgendered people from using the bathroom that matched their identity. And it was an ugly campaign. He constantly misgendered her, basically just didn't respect her identity at all. And I think that, you know, part of the reason that she was elected is somewhat due to America being, I mean, she's not the first transgendered politician, but she was one of the first openly ones. And I think that is due to the fact that America did learn more about transgendered people because of Caitlyn Jenner.
And that conversation was struck up. And that was a moment, too, 2014, 2015, the transgender tipping point on Time Magazine. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly, again, like looking back at the Pop Rocket Archives part of the conversation. But there were also a lot of other significant events, obviously, pop cultural events that took place in 2015. We brought up Drake a little while ago. Hotline Bling was the big song of 2015.
Good. It's still my favorite song.
Still a very good song. But also, you know, we had things like, you know, the North Korean Sony hack. Now the president of the United States is like hanging.
Such a gentle little scandal.
Yeah, now we have like, you know, for the last year or so, there's been this threat of like nuclear annihilation with, and like then these summits with North Korea. And I mean, isn't that funny to look back and like January 2015, the month and year that Pop Rocket began, where it's just like this quaint little Sony hack. Let's chat about it on Pop Rocket.
I mean, The fact of the matter is that that was one of those situations where we could have seen that coming for the longest time. And I don't even think anything's, I don't even think the internet has become more secure.
Nope.
I, I really don't. I think studios pulled their shit together, but I don't necessarily think, obviously, the internet has become more secure, or if anyone has been any one person that isn't really well versed in securing, you know, your information online is better at it. Yeah. I don't think anybody's really made the case for it or has struck gold on how to actually do that, except for making you confirm you're not a robot and then find all the pictures where the car is.
Oh my God, those things drive me nuts.
Pictures are really poor quality. First of all,
sharpen the focus.
Sharpen the focus. Please. I don't know if that's a car or if that's a human.
Well, you know, it strikes me, though, that whole scandal was the first time that we took a look at the way we use the internet and realized that it can be completely penetrated by an enemy of the state, basically. Yeah. I mean, we still don't know what the hell happened with Sony.
We know.
Do we think it was North Korea?
Yeah. Okay. They all but said it was them.
Well, but that doesn't mean shit. They would take credit for whatever.
That's true.
But I mean, I think now it's really interesting to think about that in terms of all of the news that has come out about Facebook and the election in the last year or two.
Did you see the story today?
Yes.
The New York Times did like a 50 person source story about how Facebook just doubled down on pretending like they didn't know about
Russian bots
and
all kinds of manipulation that's happened on Facebook.
Yeah, and a lot of it was at the hands of Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg, who just happened to be the CEO and COO of Facebook. And I mean, some of my favorite comments or tweets were like, let's just shut the whole thing down.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest with you guys, after this came out today, I absolutely see an end point for a Facebook. I never thought I would see an end point for a Facebook, but when you think about it, we can do without Facebook.
Yeah.
This is a paragraph from the New York Times story. While Mr. Zuckerberg conducted a public apology tour in the last year, Ms. Sandberg has overseen an aggressive lobbying campaign to combat Facebook's critics, shift public anger toward rival companies, and ward off damaging regulation. Facebook employed a Republican opposition research firm to discredit activist protesters, in part by linking them to the liberal financier George Soros.
Oh my God!
And it also tapped its business relationships, persuading a Jewish civil rights group to cast some criticism of the company as anti-Semitic. So, Pop Rocket people, I think we've had this discussion on the Facebook group before, but I'm basically clinging to Facebook only for you guys at this
Pretty
point.
Pretty much.
There's like one other group of moms that I love talking to, and it's like those two groups, that's all I got. Otherwise, I'd be skating the fuck off of there because I feel like it is so just corrupt and disgusting at this point.
It's going to be really difficult to sort out how we move these archives of our lives in many ways, these pictures, these events, these things.
We're going to have an entire episode about that because there are ways to do it, but I would start doing it now.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of these things that like we can kind of recall off the top of our heads about our relationship to pop culture in that moment, are there particular things from 2015 that you still stand for or cling to now that you're like, that was an enduring and lasting object or event of pop culture? You know, that is something that I carry with me to this day.
It's a gold dress. It was a gold and white dress.
Is it the gold? Is it a white dress? Is it a black dress? Is it a gold dress? Is it a blue dress?
No, I mean, I mentioned that because I was like looking through all the different titles of the shows from 2015. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot like what a delightful, ridiculous, organic thing that was. I mean, that was like, I don't know. I feel like that was right before or maybe right during winter. You could speak to this more than I could. But like, you know, before, like, companies started tweeting a lot as, like, you know.
Oh, before companies started really taking. Yeah, I think you're probably right. Companies weren't as sassy because there was always. They didn't know how to use.
Yeah, like, Moon Pies wasn't, like, ironic yet.
Yeah. Like, no one was really doing that because they just didn't know how to. I will say the most interesting thing about what's 2015 versus 2018 is that because our president is such a sociopath and also is prone to just saying whatever is on his mind, I think it's given people license to feel like they can say whatever's on their mind, whether no matter what.
Whether they've like fact checked it or not.
That too. But I think companies were a little bit more restrained because a bad tweet can send your stocks flying all over the place. But I think if you can define a persona, people will go along with it and be into it. And then, you know, it's also allowed people to sort of focus on the energy of that account versus like having a Papa John's. You don't need a Papa John's anymore. Literally and figuratively, you don't need a Papa John's anymore because he's a jerk. But you can get somebody who can be a Papa John on the Twitter account and, you know, not have to talk about racism, not have to talk about sexism or anything misogynistic and just talk about pizza. What a concept. Just talk about pizza. In an ironic way.
Just talk about the thing you're selling.
We've gotten so used to these levels of dissimulation. Well, you know, as a way of wrapping up here, one of the things I wanted to kind of bring up was that, you know, my first show was Subbing for Oliver in April 2015, and that was a lovely memory. I remember how nervous I was because I'd frankly never ever done a podcast before. And I never even really knew what podcasts were, so I have to credit Pop Rocket for bringing me into this world and exposing me to a whole vast array of worlds through Pop Rocket. I remember at the end of that episode, you can hear it on the recording, Winter says, "You're approved." And I think maybe that was the first Pop Rocket seal of approval when.
Prude and dyke about town.
You know, so I think that, so I do carry that with me. And I do, you know, eventually, I think that what ended up happening over the course of time was I subbed over a dozen times in the period of time before, from then to when I joined the show in December of 2016. And I basically Alec Baldwin'd my way on, like he was on SNL for so long. I felt like, you know, and that was the first use of Fifth Beatle came up in September 2015.
Yep, nice. And we're so glad you Fifth Beatled your way into here.
But it's true.
And we don't even have to worry about you like punching any of us or leaving a mean message on our answering.
Well, you know, I bring the vape pens and the booze in the canteens. But I do want to ask.
Thank you, Ringo.
Thank you. Exactly. Ringo, right? Ringo. And he's the fun guy.
He's the fun one.
He's the fun one. But I do want to ask, as a way of parting, if there's a kind of something that another panelist or being around the other panelists gave you from doing Pop Rocket that you learned about or changed your mind about or that like opened your mind to something, what would that be in this period of time in the 200 episodes we've had since then?
I'm smarter for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just being around you guys has definitely made me a lot smarter. Not that I thought I was like a complete idiot, but I think that I observe pop culture in a way that is not as just transactional, and I'm a much more invested, especially because time is a construct. I'm much more like interested in other content that I probably would not have given enough attention to. I really now pick and choose like what I'm going to digest, and I'm more open to watching things that I probably wasn't before, which is how I used to be. So it was basically like the internet and pop culture was growing on me and consuming me, even though I used to be the kind of person who would watch things that might not necessarily be of interest to me upon first look. But I was so consumed by that at the time, Twitter was only 140 characters.
Right.
So I was living a 140 character life, and now my life, I feel like I've taken control back of like what my interest levels are, and I'm more, you know, into more engaged content.
That's very sweet.
That's really sweet. I mean, I think that when I first started doing the show, and basically from my own background of like having a master's degree in critical studies from an art school that took things way too seriously and writing about pop culture professionally. I think I felt always a lot of pressure to write, to watch and take in things that I felt like were serious and like worth my time. And I think doing this show has opened me up to just like a lot more frivolity and fun.
Opposite.
Yeah. Like in a way, I think I got like looser and more willing to just follow any interest that I might have, even if it was just totally like, you know, something that wasn't really going to become
like the
on
golden
my top
white dress.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like wasn't going to become on my like top 10 critical list of the year or whatever. Yeah. Like it was just an hour of like basically putting my finger in the wind and going, what's going on right now in culture? Like, what silly thing is this? And how can I talk about it on this show? And I think, you know, a lot of I remember in the beginning of the show, too, somebody posted on our Facebook group, you know, kind of figuring out who all of us were, our tastes and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And I remember Oliver and I being described as like the mother and the father of you and Guy, because we
That's
were much more like.
Right.
Serious and
That's
parental.
So right.
And it did make me think, you know, it was funny and I totally agree and see what that person was talking about. I wish I could remember who it was. But anyway, like it did make me think like,
why don't they have Google?
Well, shouldn't I just also be like a child with my own, like be at play with what I'm watching and taking in and just not be so serious about it? So to get specific, I remember a movie that Winter raved about in one episode and it was It Follows. And it came out in 2014 and it's directed by David Robert Mitchell. And it's this incredible, supernatural, spooky, strange story where basically... Oh man, how do you even describe this movie?
It's the demon is the STD.
So yes.
The STD gets passed through sex, but the STD is actually a demon
yeah.
that follows you.
Yes. Okay. So when you raved about It Follows, I remember you talking about it and I was like, I kind of filed it away. And then at one point when David and I were trying to decide to watch a horror movie, I said, you know, Winter was talking about this movie, It Follows, and it sounded really good and interesting. And we watched it and we loved it.
Yes. Yeah.
And particularly loved the music of that movie.
Yes.
Like it has this like 80s creepy, like quiet synthy thing going on. And yeah, that was just one of the instances where like something that one of you guys said in this room, I went back home and probably weeks later kind of went, oh, you know what, I'm going to take that in. Oliver Wang, who was part of our crew in the beginning, also talked about Another Country, this novel by James Baldwin,
okay.
as being a really formative book for him. And I love James Baldwin, but I hadn't read that one yet. And so when he talked about it, and based on what he talked about, I went and got the book and absolutely fell in love with it and have read that book now two or three times since. And I've assigned it to classes that I've taught, and it's been a huge like marker for me. So thank you, Oliver, for that.
I mean, also to just add again to, you know, Winter Mitchell influencer, Schitt's Creek.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yes!
You totally brought this like little slice of just joy and humor.
It's so great.
When you brought that in and I was like, oh, maybe I'll try it out. Like that really it transformed my life and various other people's lives because I told them they had to watch it too.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think that to get really specific, that's really great. Also, you know, I resisted the frickin' Great British Baking Show forever.
I'm still resisting and I know I'm going
to
fall.
To me. I know I'm going.
You guys,
it's
you guys are very close. We're like dominoes here.
Yeah.
Our dear leader Guy Branum, you know, was an early, early adopter of all these things, all things British, and certainly that show, and that toppled me as well. And of course, you know, all of us are incredibly grateful to all of you Rocketeers for enhancing us and for bringing your suggestions and your comments and sometimes your pushback to our conversations. And I think one of the things that keeps this show going and the main thing that keeps it going is really your enthusiasm, your engagement, the places that you take us to. And that's really wonderful. And please keep listening. And we're so very grateful for you. I also want to give a specific shout out today because this episode will air on Friday, but this happened today when we record on Wednesday. Megan Martinez, one of our dear Rocketeers, just got her PhD today.
She got a PhD.
I think you mean Dr. Martinez.
Dr. Martinez.
Megan Martinez.
Congratulations from all of us here at Pop Rocket.
Very proud of
so
you.
So impressed.
You and you never saw you sweat.
No.
Exactly.
Never saw you sweat.
She just always posted like joyous, interesting things.
And very smart. Very proud of you.
We have the smartest listeners in all of podcastry, and we thank you for being there.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
How does this sound? A weekend on a beautiful mountaintop in California. You wake up, eat a tasty meal with some new friends, some old friends, maybe the hosts of your favorite podcasts. After that, it's a couple of inspiring classes, spectacular podcast tapings, a hilarious stand-up showcase, a dance party, and more. And s'mores! All of this can be yours at Max FunCon, returning to Lake Arrowhead next June. Tickets go on sale Friday, November 23rd. Put that on your calendar because Max FunCon tickets always sell out. Get a head start planning your next summer vacation and go to maxfuncon.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio,
Winter Mitchell-Rorba.
Margaret Wappler.
So as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Guy has taken his winter hiatus to travel a little bit. But since this is our 200th episode, of course, our fearless leader could not leave us without a lovely pop culture conversation with his mother and his niece, Olivia, whom we've heard about quite a few times. We've heard her growing up on Pop Rocket over these past few years. And anyway, he has recorded this lovely message for us from a weekend excursion to Mendocino with his family. Let's take a listen.
I thought we would have a little conversation and talk about the culture we had been consuming over the course of this long weekend. First of all, let me introduce the people I have here in the room with me. Tell everybody what your name is.
My name is Deb.
And how do you know me?
I don't know. How many hours of labor was that?
And also here, we have my beloved niece. She's a high school senior. She's 17 years old. Everybody please welcome Olivia Allen.
Hello.
Tonight, we ended up watching a show that Debbie and Olivia recommended to me a couple of years ago, and I didn't listen to them. And then I started watching it on my own, and I realized it was really great, but you guys had stopped watching it. What show is that, Debbie?
Schitt's Creek.
And why do you like Schitt's Creek?
Because it is hilarious, and I like to laugh.
Tell everybody what Schitt's Creek is about.
Well, it's about this very well-to-do family. They got ripped off, and they owed their... He hadn't paid their taxes. I believe they had this remarkable amount of money that they owed to the IRS. And
or whatever they call that in Canada.
Yeah. And they lost everything. Everything. And these were people who had everything. And their lifestyle went from extremely opulent to they live in this little highway nasty motel now because that's all they can afford.
The only asset they were able to keep was a little town that they owned.
Right. Now, I don't know if it works this way up in Canada, but you people might like to know this. If the IRS ever comes after you, whatever you're wearing, whatever you have on your body, they can't take that.
Oh, really?
They can take every... Yes, so you just put your entire wardrobe on your body and all of your jewelry, whatever, maybe stack some furniture.
This is classic Debbie Branham. This is centuries of Jewish oppression resulting in her thinking that you should have all of your valuables stitched inside of your clothes at all moments in case we need to flee. Also, do you know what Pop Rocket is?
Well, I watched a movie once called Bottle Rocket, and I like the hell out of that.
But Debbie, what is Pop Rocket?
Well, Pop Rocket is, it's a podcast.
It's a podcast. Mm-hmm. And what happens on Pop Rocket?
People talk about interesting things in pop culture.
Who are those people?
Well, you would be one of them.
Yes.
And hell if I know who the rest is.
Oh, that's fair. Actually, I looked at it earlier, but I don't remember the names.
Thanks for paying so much attention to my creative life.
I do pay attention to your creative life. You just...
As she scans the floor for more
houses. Have you finished my book yet?
No, but I'm working on it. I don't see very well.
You're listening to it on audiobook, though. What stopped you from doing that?
Well, I don't see the remote very well.
So are there any other pieces of culture that you guys would like to recommend? Deborah Branham, what pieces of culture are you all about these days?
Let's see. I watched the series Longmire, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I like shoot 'em up cowboy kind of stuff, I guess. Uh-huh. I like war movies. Mm-hmm. Grew up in a house with all boys.
Uh-huh.
I also like wrestling and what's that kind of fighting? MFA?
MMA. No. She's talking about the Israeli street fighting that she practices on me.
All right, Olivia, what culture would you like to recommend?
Well, I got to watch the first like 40 minutes of Kingsman 2, so I absolutely love the over-the-top ridiculousness of the Kingsman series. And then, I don't know how much of your audience is familiar with webtoons, but there's one that I've been super into lately. It's like a sort of modern-ish retelling of the Hades and Persephone story.
Oh, really?
Where Hades is this big businessman that runs the underworld, who's been alive for thousands of years, and Persephone is this relatively new young woman that appears, and it's explained that he is literally thousands of years while she is physically and immortally only 19.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of this like publicity battle and trying to get her into the world without pissing off Demeter. Uh-huh. And it's just a beautiful little story that's barely off the ground.
Well, that sounds really cool. That sounds really cool. All right. Before we go, Debbie, why am I the best son ever?
Because you're the only one I have. That kind of, you know, narrows it down there.
I know, but do you have any other arguments for why I'm a great son?
Oh, just too many to mention. You're kind. You're generous. You're extremely intelligent.
No one believes you.
You're irritating.
All right.
Most of the time, you're irritating as hell.
Thank you so much to Deborah Branham. And Olivia Newreat Allen.
Hey.
And we will toss it back to Winter Mitchell, Karen Thompson, and Margaret Wobbler in the studio, if they are in the studio, but you guys have no idea who they are because you have never.
Well, we know their names.
I've seen them.
All right, can you say those names?
Karen Wobbler. Another chick and a guy.
No.
Okay. So every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? Winter Mitchell, what's your current jam?
This song came out at the beginning, not a summer jam, but somehow lingered through the summer and is still played religiously into 2018. It's Rihanna's Bitch Better Have My Money, which was about her accountant who stole her money, which messed up her house up in the hills. This is just...
Celebrity problems.
Hashtag.
But I really think this is, you know, just directly calling out your accountant for fucking up your finances in a song is just genius. Pay me what you want.
And, of course, that is also Winter Mitchell's mantra.
Yes. Yes, she did my billing yesterday.
Many times.
While that's right.
Hurting my throat.
All right, so, Margaret.
I'm a lousy accountant.
I mean, that's why I need to hire an accountant. I would otherwise, you know.
Don't have me do it for you.
So, Margaret. Do you have a jam for us this week?
I do. Well, you know, looking back on 2015, I always like to look at any year, really, and just figure out what I miss, because you always miss stuff. And I have to say, too, that as a person who's written about pop culture professionally for a long time, you get really burned out on just writing and talking about the things that happened that week. Like, you get so tired of just being attached to your calendar and pretending that you're a person that only lives by like 5 days a week spurts. In reality, we all like listen to music that's old and in the past and, you know, things that I still listen to from high school. Let's just be honest. But this is not from high school. This is from 2015. This is a band called Lower Dens. This is an album that they came out with that year called Escape from Evil. And the song is called To Die in L.A. Basically a play off of William Friedkin's To Live and Die in L.A., but I'm repurposing it basically to describe my feeling this week in L.A. It's been a tough week for California, and I feel like not everyone is really tuning into that as a country. 83% of our beautiful Santa Monica Mountains burned down. Malibu's ravaged. Up north, the campfire near Sacramento, that's been the deadliest fire in California history. And there's been a lot of interesting conversations I've seen spark on Twitter amongst media people about, like, why do we get such 24/7 coverage of every, like, hurricane, storm, et cetera, that hits the East Coast, and this fire just doesn't feel like it's quite getting the same play, or, like, people don't quite understand it. And I think in some ways it is about, like, how hard it is to report live from a fire. I mean, you cannot stand with a wall of flame at your back, inhaling acrid smoke for very long, if at all. So anyway, think about your people in California and Los Angeles and send us your good wishes, because we really need it.
We really do. So on an, and now for something completely different,
yeah,
as Monty Python would say. And I was really thinking back on an artist who is among the most lauded from Pop Rocket. And certainly I think that the rest of the panel might be irritated by the extent to which Guy Branum and I are always talking about Carly Rae Jepsen. But there you have it. She has a new single that came out at the beginning of this month. It's called Party for One, and it's every bit as perfect a pop bobble as all of her other fine work. 2015 was the year of CRJ's Emotions album, which was among the best that year, I would hazard to say. And so here's Carly carrying it on and keeping the flame alive in 2018. Tried to let it go and say I'm over you. So there, a little spot of joy, a little bit of 2015 brought into 2018. And again, thank you for listening, Pop Rocketeers. We're always thrilled to have you be a part of our lives. You have been listening to Pop Rocket, a podcast hosted by me, Karen Tongson, with Margaret Wappler and Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. This week, we'd like to thank Alanis Vinaigrette.
I love it.
We'll have to keep that name around.
I want that on my salad.
Exactly. And Alanis says, Pop Rocket curates all things pop culture in a world of pop culture overload. Guy's bottom standing, Margaret's literary prowess, Winter's music taste, and Karen's entire being.
Damn, you got a holistic shout out, Karen.
What really make this standout pop culture podcast to keep you in your podcast listening podcasting machines. Taylor Gary says Guy Branum is sauce. Margaret and Karen too. Love me some Hey Rocketeers. And if you want us to hear your feedback or even ask a panelist for advice, or guess what? Give us some wishes for our 200th episode and beyond. You can call Guy's mom at 530-237-4108.
Hey, Debbie, what's up?
What's up, Debbie? That's not really her number, but, you know, it's got the same area code, I bet. 530-237-4108. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and be a part of the discussion, as well as our Instagram, which is
Pop Rocket Podcast.
So, we're a production of MaximumFun.org. The show is edited by Shana Deloria, and our senior producer is, as always, the Swish Swish Fish, Laura Swisher.
Maximum Fun. MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.